Do you love Making Movies Is Hard and you want to listen to more episodes?
Jump over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/MMIH and you can listen to the entire back catalog of episodes for just $1.99 a month.
That's an additional 300 episodes that aren't on iTunes that you can listen to whenever you please.
But without any more blibber blabber, back to the show! You know, making movies is hard.
Making movies is hard.
Welcome. This is the podcast about the struggle of being an independent filmmaker. I'm Mark Bissell, the founding host of the podcast. I'm a sci-fi horror filmmaker, and my first feature film, The Alternate, is out now on digital DVD and Tubi.
I'm Liz Manischel. I'm a writer, director, producer who has made two features, Bread and Butter and Speed of Life, and I'm currently making others, including one called Best Friends Forever. I'm a distribution consultant who does sales, and I used to manage Sundance's Creative Distribution Initiative. On this Thursday throwback episode, we're going to play our interview with filmmakers Angie Powers and Elizabeth Stark from way back in January 2019 with one of our old co-hosts, L. Jeffrey Moore. Angie and Elizabeth talked to Ulrich and L. Jeffrey Moore about how they got into filmmaking, making movies as a couple, and making their first feature film, Lost in the Middle. We thought this was a good match. I mean, I haven't heard it, so I'm just going to say that Ulrich thought this was a good match for our talk with the Alishas from A Kaddish for Bernie Madoff, which we released earlier this week, because this is an interview with another filmmaking team about pulling their feature together. And also, it sounds like it's delving into what kind of partnerships you could have in terms of creative partnerships and personal partnerships that contribute to making a movie. After that, we play another round of You're the expert. I don't know what the voice is still. But first, don't forget to check out our Patreon page. So what is Patreon? Patreon is a way where you support artists, you patronize them. Patreon, our Patreon link is patreon.com/MMIH podcast. And it's a monthly fee. It could be super low. $1.99 is all you need to contribute a month to get access to our entire back catalog. That's an insanely good deal. So I encourage you to take us up on it. But without any further bibble babble, here's our throwback interview with Angie Powers and Elizabeth Stark.
Today's special guests are two Bay Area filmmakers who have made the jump to making their first feature film, Lost in the Middle. Please welcome Angie Powers and wife producing partner Elizabeth Stark. Hey, ladies, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Awesome. So why don't you guys tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Elizabeth, you want to start?
Sure. Well, let's see. We live in Sebastopol, California, up in the wine country, Sonoma County, and where Angie grew up. And we run a business together called Book Writing World, where we teach creative writing to adults. And we also do our own writing projects. And Angie's a film... screenwriter, director. Pick up anytime you want, Ange.
I'm just a film.
I'm a novelist turned producer.
Yes. And I actually have an MFA in fiction and creative writing, an MA in film, and a screenwriting program certificate, and made some short films, and now I'm making a long one. So there you go. That's my bio. Made some short films and now making a long one.
Well, that seems to be the process. Nice. Like, you make a lot of short films, then you're like, I should do something else. And, oh, hey, let's do a feature.
So I wanted to know about how you both got into filmmaking and how you, you know, did you like go to film school? Did you just figure it out on your own? Like, how did you, you know, make your first short film?
My very, very, very first short film, I actually went to City College in San Francisco and took a production class. And so I made a complete short film in the production class that got into the Frameline Festival. And it was an assignment that was basically, you know, take a character through space. And so I thought, well, San Francisco has great railroad apartments, lots of good space. So I used that. And Elizabeth was, in fact, in that film. And so that was my first film. That's how I started.
That was called Hot Date.
Oh, not on IMDb.
Hot Date. Oh, it's not?
Huh? Okay.
I don't see it there. Not surprising. I did everything on it, so it's not got the production value. that one would hope.
But it did play at Frameline, so there you go.
That's pretty. That's amazing. Wow. So what year was that that you made Hot Date?
2006.
Yes. Wow. And is that when you guys met, or did you know each other before then?
We met Thanksgiving 1991 at a vegan festival. Festivities. Oh, wow. It's not festival. You, a vegan dinner.
Vegan dinner. I'm
vegan still enjoying that. Yeah. So.
Wow. Wow. I didn't know they had vegan Thanksgivings in 1991. I thought that was like a new thing.
No. What did all that comprise of?
No, seitan. It was like Mario made the seitan turkey, but it was just basically like a sponge in a foil pan, and then the rest of your veggies, and like I think yeast gravy,
wine.
Oh wow, nice. Yeah, my parents were macrobiotic cookers or chefs.
I like cookers.
When I was a kid, my mom used to make seitan all the time. So you
totally know.
Yeah, but I love seitan more than tofurkey or anything else. I think seitan's one of the best of the.
It's like your comfort
things.
Food.
Yes,
but isn't it pure gluten though? Right. And I love gluten, so that doesn't
bother
me. Yeah,
they've stripped everything but the gluten out in seitan. So. No, but you
know. Not for the gluten-free.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Wow. So then, so you guys know each other for a long time then. And then, so when you made Hot Date, it was just like, did you have interest in acting? Or was it just more like a thing where Angie was like, hey, I need an actor. Will you be in this movie?
Yeah, I mean, I did acting when I was a teenager. But at that point, I actually was pregnant. And she just needed somebody. And I was available. And another friend of mine did it. And we used another friend's apartment. It was that kind of thing.
Oh, wow. Awesome. And then, so Angie, what made you decide to get into filmmaking at that point in your life? Was it just something that you'd always wanted to do and you were like finally going to do it? Or was there something that drove you towards making that movie and doing the Frameline thing?
Well, I think the main drive for film for me has always been that it is both collaborative and solo. It is both sort of creative and linear, and it is also, there are certain things that are, I just have a very broad set of interests, and so it lets me be the weirdo techie person that I like to be, and the intuitive creative person that I like to be. And I really got clear on that when I started making the short films, and then it was just fun because I had that chunk of time with the cast and crew, but I had that solo time when I was writing. So I think it's one of the few things that lets me really
Films, like what was the goal that you had as a filmmaker? Was it just to tell that specific story and then nothing else mattered? Or do you have like, you know, any other goals in mind when you got into the whole thing?
Well, it's sort of funny. I'm not really, I have learned to better promote myself than I did when I first got into film. Our second film, Little Mutinies, was played at the Palm Springs Short Fest. And that was a great opportunity to network. There were name actors out in the film, filmmaker lounge. It was and directors. Oh, wow. And I showed up with like my shorts and flip flops, and everyone else was there with all of the marketing material. And I was like, what is this?
Okay. My favorite story about this is that Angie quarterfinaled for the Nichols one year, and a couple of agents called our house to say, you know, what else do you have? And she was like, I don't really write commercial films. In all fairness, Angie, in this period we had two young children, and you know, it was a miracle that we made it to Palm Springs, so I give us that.
No, as a parent, definitely, I totally get the fact that, you know, at least you got there.
So
I have questions about that. Like, were you just not interested in pursuing an agent at that time, or was it like
I didn't really understand? I was coming from, I think, well, one, it was 12 years ago, right? So at this point, so when we look at how the world is now and how it was then, like the fact that agents called me, right? Like, I think at this point I would get an email or someone would
right.
catch me up in social media or something. These people called my house. I was having conversations with them. It just wasn't the same concept. I mean, I don't even know exactly when Facebook came out, but it was just, it was a different time. And so I didn't really know. And I think it's confusing because you think that what you want to do is go to Hollywood because those are the jobs and people are there. And there is an amazing amount of stuff happening down there right now, for sure. And there's amazing things happening up here. And I think when I think about my goals now, I'm excited to find people to collaborate with who are part of the community I'm a part of, because I think there are ways now to actually financially support yourself through your creativity and be able to do it in a way that doesn't mean you have to go be part of a bigger machine. But I could be wrong.
So have the two of you have had a talk about moving down to LA?
We've had like fantasies sort of about it because we're fiction writers, right? So we always imagine every scenario. We talk about moving to London, Paris, Spain, yes. where I've never even been, but
nice.
So it's come up like
well,
that.
Well, we have definitely talked about it. You more than
did
I
you
have
say
some
beyond
friends
that
who are
I don't think.
Definitely part of a community down there. And again, I don't, you know, when you look at what it means to be part of these, like when I do corporate video, because again, I have to do that sort of on the side. When I do that, those people are so concerned about things that can make it less fun to be doing the work. And Hollywood's a business. I don't.
Give me an example of the things people are concerned about that make it less fun. I'm
well,
just curious.
I mean, interestingly enough, I've found that in some ways, my standards might be higher than some of my clients with regard to what I'm putting out. And
right. That's almost always the case. I mean, not always, but I mean, you know, oftentimes it's like, just get the thing shot and get it on time and good enough is
right.
great.
For a dollar and a half and... a lot of like, you know, here we're doing these event things. Can you bring one shooter? And you're just like, I could, but I would have nothing to work with in the edit. And they're like, great. Just like, and so, and I have, you know, I don't know. I've never been in the Hollywood, you know, machine, but I imagine that there is also an awareness of budgets and costs and timeline and who's doing what. And I it's hard to imagine, maybe it's my own limited imagination, but at this juncture going down there, I don't know that I would have the time to maybe do the kinds of things that I would want to do, which is also to build relationships as I'm collaborating with people.
Which is definitely kind of how the answer to how did we fund our feature film. But I want to circle back really quickly and just say two quick things about the not being ready to promote yourself and your art. Because I think there are two things. One is, you know, if you're socialized not to be the person who takes center stage, for example, if you're socialized female or you're queer or you're, you know, there's like lots of people who aren't socialized to be like, yes, you're going to be interested in me. You know, thank goodness you called. Like, it's about time, you know, Mr. Agent or whatever. So I think that's one thing. And I think the other thing is not understanding the business side of the art and whatever model, you know, because I think Angie's sort of intimating that they're, you know, she's really interested in some of the self-distribution models and some of the more grassroots, and we're definitely working in a super micro budget, create, you know, community sponsored form. And I think there's a lot that's really exciting about that. And, you know, as a novelist, it's taken me a long time to really commit to also being a part of the industry and understanding it at all the levels and being able to speak to it so that when you, you know, so that you're ready to go out and say, I know what your interests are. I know what you're looking for. here's how I can say who, you know, how I fit that and how our interests relate and how my art fits into your industry.
Right. And that comes with, you know, time, of course, and then also not feeling as if you have to do anything in order to, quote unquote, make it.
But and educating yourself about it, you know, it's not that kind of art can sometimes seem super mysterious, like, oh, this is my creative, you know, soul expressing itself. And then it's like, okay, but how do you build an audience? What do people actually want? What do we want when we're on the audience side of things? You know, and actually being willing to ask those questions and put them in conversation with the woo-woo creative.
I think after this conversation, I might want to maybe do an informational interview with some people down there, because if it's at all like the rest of the fun of filmmaking, well, maybe we should move to Hollywood.
Well, it's interesting.
We're moving to Hollywood right after this recording.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't really understand how the business side of it really works either, which, you know, is something I'm desperately trying to figure it out, you know?
Well, I think there are a lot of things, like there's a long history of independent film. And I think when we look at what can be done on what size budget now, it's ridiculous. And when you consider that most films, even ones that people drop $5 million on, are going to actually end up spending most, if not all of their life on a computer screen, it's a very different set of technical requirements than if it's going to be up on a 12-foot screen. Those are just very different animals. And I think you can make some amazing stuff. And that's one of the things that I was really experimenting with in terms of the production model for Lost in the Middle. I think you can make some amazing things with very limited equipment and with the intention of using creating a story to meet your technical limitations, so that you're not spending $150,000 to get, you know, a red when it's actually going to end up on a computer screen.
Well, the other thing I would say about that is that, you know, if you shoot on something like even a GH4 or these other less expensive cameras, I mean, they look good enough where if you do blow it up onto a big screen, it does hold up, you know? Like, there's lots of scenes in big movies that are shot on 5Ds and iPhones even.
Right.
You know? And it's yes. Like, Jeff just challenged me to make a movie on my iPhone recently, which will be a podcast episode. I don't know if it'll be out now or later whenever this episode releases. But it was just kind of mind-blowing to shoot something with the phone and then look at it on my screen and be like, this looks pretty good. like, what the hell?
Right, exactly.
I'm telling you, I was very excited when they accepted
the
show.
Well, it's Tangerine, right?
Awesome.
And
well, Ange, talk about what we did. Talk, because we shot.
We actually shot with two GH4s, and our cinematographer kindly loaned us his. He broke it on primes,
oh, nice.
So we were shooting on those with the GH4s. We had two cameras going, and the whole intention was to create sort of a 360 shooting environment that the actors could walk around
wow.
in. And
interesting.
It wasn't like, yeah, and it wasn't like it was my creative, like, singular idea. It's actually something that has been around for a very long time. And so film's been around for 100 and something years at this point. But it's been around long enough that it wasn't surprising. And there were a lot of articles, books, documentaries where you could hear people talking about doing this kind of project. And so I really wanted to design it to be, we did boom it, right? We did boom some of it, but we also used a lot of the wireless lavs to get more flexibility. So you do end up with challenges in framing. And you also end up with interesting opportunities for the actors to engage in ways they might not if it's overly structured.
So when you say 360 shooting environment, do you mean that you like light it in a way where you can shoot the whole room wherever you want to set up the cameras, yes. basically.
Yes. Yeah, so we were all handheld. Okay. So it's a group film, and it's supposed to feel both funny and a little bit like the whole world's a little bit shaky. So we were never on sticks. So we did the whole thing handheld and, you know, on a rig. Yeah. A lot of natural lighting, augmenting it here and there. And I think it came out surprisingly well, given that. So, you know, the value of the film, if we were to add up the time that people volunteered, far exceeds what we actually ended up paying out. We're hoping that the film ends up being something where those people can take that volunteer time and be proud of where it ends up and what it's become and where it goes. Yes.
Right. Did you guys do deferred payment deals with anybody, or was it all just kind of understanding that like this is a donation based film. You're just putting your time into it. And then like, just to make this thing that we all care about.
Well, it was, that assumed we had a certain amount of planning that we maybe didn't. Basically what happened was I decided we had to shoot it like ASAP. Otherwise it wasn't going to get done. And I still don't think I was wrong. Because we didn't really have, yeah, I mean, we didn't really have a hard set requirement. So if we didn't make a deadline, it wasn't going to happen. So we ended up, yes.
Yeah. And we got Guinevere Turner attached and then it ended up like kind of having this little media blitz that went viral, and we ended up getting like 300 people emailing us saying, I want to be involved. I want to volunteer. So we ended up with this kind of incredible volunteer cast. So we didn't do any formal agreements, and there is no profit in the movie at this point. If there were, I would definitely want to funnel it back to all the participants. We have no way are planning to, you know, abscond.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's saying that. It really was a scrappy film in many, many ways. And so there's definitely things that I look back and feel like we could do better, for sure. But that's one of the things, you know, at this point,
more crowdfunding,
getting closer. Like when I watch this film, I feel good about it. And we submitted to a fairly well recognized film festival and got rejected, but it was a very friendly rejection, which to me says something. Yes.
Do you want to say what film festival it is, or you specifically don't want to say what film festival it is?
I would think I want to wait till we get in somewhere before I actually talk about the rest of it. But
my old partner the podcast, Timothy, his favorite thing is to talk about people who get rejected from Sundance and the Sundance rejection numbers and how everyone gets rejected from Sundance unless you're like a certain person, whatever. So my inside guess is Sundance, but you don't have to say.
That would be a good guess. But, you know, and that's why I think it's easy to get depressed and dissuaded, but I feel actually like it was a nice rejection, which is not something you normally get. And yeah.
Did it feel like it was like tailor-made for you or what?
And so.
Cool.
Yeah. It was, people that's had huge. Seen it and talked about it.
Well, that's a plus for them actually seeing it and then saying something about it. I mean, because there are talks that, you know, when a film is submitted, no one ever watches it and they reject you anyway. So,
like, if you put up a Vimeo link, they actually download it.
We actually talked to somebody and learned that people think, because you can track, you know, how many views something's had, they download it in a way so that they can, you know, they sweep it away and watch it somewhere else. Wow. So we have that whole thing.
That's interesting. I mean, it wasn't true. I just, my initial thought when you're talking about, you know, the feelings of getting rejected from a film festival, especially Sundance, is just like, I don't feel like anyone should be feeling bad when they don't get into Sundance. And the fact that you got a personalized rejection email, I mean, that's really wonderful. So yeah, you guys should be feeling well, very
thank you.
Awesome.
Definitely.
But you know what's funny, and maybe this is partly because film is so collaborative. I mean, because like I say, I'm really a novelist, although actually novel writing ends up being more collaborative than you'd think. Yeah. But I mean, and maybe because this is Angie's artistic vision, but what I love is that I love this film and that I don't rethink it or reevaluate it because of this, you know, rejection. And I think that's where you want to get to with, you know, with these kinds of things, because you can't, you know, you can't control it. And we all know films we love that are our favorite films that, you know, didn't make it here and here. And, you know, or films you say you have to watch this and someone else can't get into it. So it's all so subjective. But if you can love your own thing, I think that's a gift.
Well, you know, and in all fairness, we applied at a very late date, right. And it didn't have color
or soundtrack.
So it had, you know, we didn't have the great music that would be coming very shortly.
Well, and I'm just really, because you talked about shooting with two cameras and you talked about your 360 shooting environment that you set up for your scenes. Mm-hmm. How did you use your two cameras? Like, did you do wide and tight on one actor, or did you shoot the two medium shots of the two actors talking at the same time? Like, how did you use your two cameras?
It would depend on the setup that we were in. So in some places we would do the wide and the medium. And actually we shot in 4K where we could, with the idea that we would in fact continue to blow up if we needed to. So we didn't do super, super tight. Because we knew we were going out to 180. And so in some tight spaces, we did that because you couldn't have people sort of super across the room from each other. In bigger spaces, we definitely did actually sort of multiple things. So if you ever see the movie Ulrich, there are a lot of circular scenes where people are arguing across a table or doing something like that. And so we would have people in that case, you know, hiding in the hallway at one point doing one actor and someone else, you know, coming the other direction. So we would get coverage that way. It just depended on the room.
Nice.
Or the space.
That's awesome. So when you did that kind of coverage where you would shoot on either side, like, you know, both halves of the table at the same time, what kind of coverage would you get for those scenes? Would you make sure that you got a medium shot or a close up on each actor talking, or did you sometimes just
let
it go?
We never worried about the close up because again, we were shooting in 4K. So if you're pushing into a close up, you don't see the background as much. So it's not going to, I think the time that when you blow up and it isn't as effective is when you're going from really wide to say a medium, because you have some of that environment and you can have a sense of, that you didn't really change lenses.
Yeah. So you thought the way that you guys did it, you ended up making it so it didn't really, you couldn't tell that you just pushed in. Like, it looks like it could have just been a lens swap just as what?
Wow. Right.
That's
right.
Smart.
And then we, you know, it's also a great way to catch. There were some times when we couldn't have two rolling at the same time. So if we couldn't have two rolling at the same time, I often would ask the second camera operator, Ben, to pick up detail shots, things that we knew we would want to use later. So in some ways it was a little bit like a documentary, and we knew, okay, in this fight scene, we might want to see hands, or we might want to see, you know, I don't even remember. I have a big thing for hands, I guess. So you could get detail shots or other B-roll while the other person was working if they couldn't both be doing coverage.
Cool. Nice. I want to get into a lot of into some of the creative parts. So how did Lost in the Middle come to be, you know, as far as like, how'd you think about it? Were there any people in your real life that you were like, oh, these would make great characters? Let me talk about that.
Yeah, I actually started, the idea was originally for a wedding. My friend from high school, I have some friends that I have been friends with since high school, and one of them was getting married, and I just looked around the table. Of course, all the high school friends were in the back because we're sort of badly behaved. And I just looked around, and there was one friend talking about how she and her wife have three different anniversaries because of regulations around gay marriage. And one person was going through a divorce, and one person, you know, was recently married to his, you know, sort of ideal love person. And so the original idea started with, oh, well, old friends at a wedding. Mm-hmm. But old friends at a wedding doesn't really have as much force as grief.
Right. Really. Can I just say one more thing about this? Because I really love this piece, which is the thing that happened at that, I can never remember which one it was, but the place in Idlewild where you had to go pitch a film where you got
CineStory.
That story. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Gosh. We were at a pitch thing, and I don't remember exactly even what I said.
It was kind of an opportunity to pitch something, and it was in a learning environment. So it wasn't like about getting funding or anything, but it was a practice opportunity, and it seemed like, well, let's just do this. And so we kind of pulled from some real life stuff to just create really clear, memorable characters, memorable to Angie, you know, mm-hmm. And a story. And then she went and pitched it, and they really loved it. And so I feel like that in some ways was the heart of this, because you know what I mean? You started thinking about those people.
Right. But the intention of this particular story, I love my friends. I think the environment that I grew up in, hated it when I was a kid, just hated it, couldn't wait to leave. But I think it's remarkably beautiful now. And it's a place that I want to share with other people. So those are the two things. My friends and the place I grew up are the things that sort of drive this story.
That's awesome. I mean, one of the things that I really dug about the script, I guess, you know, we haven't really, you know, talked about it, but I am actually in the film, and
it's yes. all about your character. Really.
I know, right? Just, is it's it? Just kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay.
His character is the one who dies.
Oh, wow.
And so he was the heart
spoiler.
Of the group. Yeah. Well, it's the beginning.
It's okay.
The beginning.
there's no trailer, right? So I don't know anything really about the movie.
That's the other thing I'm working on right now. Okay. Is working on the trailer.
Maybe by the time we release this episode, the trailer will be done and we can attach it to this, this episode.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. But what was really cool about it, you know, is just the fact that, you know, when I read the script, and, you know, I just realized, I was like, man, these people are like my high school classmates when I was in high school. You know, I was, you know, the theater geek. And so it just, you know, mm-hmm. everybody was comprised of, you know, whatever. And most of my classmates who actually came out and later became a part of the LGBTQ community, where I grew up in North Carolina, and seeing the first screening was like, oh, great. This is pretty much what I knew I wanted to see in film anyway, you know, like the new normal, you know, where yeah. we're now seeing movies, you know, and TV shows that are beginning to reflect the world that we live, you know, in the 21st century. So,
This is
relatively speaking, of course.
Yes, the world we want to see.
Some of us are in a completely different world.
The bubble that we live in the 21st century yeah. in
oh,
Northern
man.
California.
Oh,
but,
man.
But, you know, yeah. Angie, I mean, we're here. We're back where she grew up. And it has some of the drawbacks of the suburbs. But she did really have this quite diverse group of friends. And, you know, none of them were completely out.
In that they were the kids that went to college from my
right.
high school.
That's where my friends came out. Well, they all went to college. I was like, well, yeah, yes. I kind of knew, but, you know, thanks.
Yeah.
And you grew up in Sonoma County. Is that right?
Yeah. Nice. So we moved here when I was 7. So
okay.
That makes her kind of a newcomer.
So, yeah, like I said. I am a newcomer. I did go to an elementary school where they, you know, have people like, if your grandparents went here, remain standing. And, you know, it is a small town, but it's changing a lot. It is changing a lot. And in many ways for the better. And so it's, but the environment, the space, you know, right now I'm looking out my window and just enjoying the storm clouds, the trees, and there's just so much greenery here that I want to capture that and bring it into the rest of the world. And, you know, I feel like it's just something that to me is still so beautiful.
That's awesome. That's yeah, awesome.
That's really cool.
And another thing. Okay. So I haven't told you ladies this, but I had a little mini geek fest in my head, knowing that when I first saw the posting on Facebook about your movie and Gwyneth Turner being in it, uh-huh, I of course was like, fucking American Psycho. I'm like, hell yeah. I'm like, I gotta get up in this, you know? And so how long have you guys known each other? And she seems to, you know, pop up in most of your work.
Right? Well, she's so amazing, right? If you have the opportunity.
Yes.
So I don't exactly remember. Maybe it was my co-director. I made a film called FTF, Female to Femme, which is a kind of mock-documentary about gender transition. And she was in it. And that was a long time ago. Or I don't know. When was that? Anyway. And so that was kind of how I knew her from that film. And so right, then we asked her to be in the short
Little Mutinies.
And she came up and did that. And I mean, she's just incredibly generous and talented.
Wow, that's great.
Yes, absolutely. She's hugely generous. And, you know, we actually had people that were working on that film ask, like, how did you get her to do this? And I was like, I asked. And so I do think that
that's you my did job. Ask, that's the reason I'm the producer. It's because I know
she's the producer. Well, I asked you.
And there was a lot of asking going
on. We hadn't been married that many decades.
Right. We did have kids. But I do think that one of those things, like when we went to Palm Springs, if you can get a short film into Palm Springs, that is a phenomenal short film festival. Yeah. The people there are so
congratulations
nice.
Congratulations for getting in. I mean, I've gotten rejected from them a lot of times. So
yeah, they're great. I have two. Like, don't.
They also love Gwyneth, so she helped.
Yes. So that helps. But we got to meet, you know, some, you know, directors of feature films, talk about, like, how do you connect with stars and how do you strategize and how do you do those kind of reaching out things? Again, I'm terrible at those. So I guess I would suggest to filmmakers out there, if you are terrible about asking for things, marry someone who's better at it. And then
or find a producer. You don't have to marry that person.
Right.
Well, that's right. A marriage pretty much into itself, though, whether it's
right.
On paper or partnership.
One of the things that the director we spoke with, maybe whose name I'm forgetting, at Palm Springs suggested, is there's this incredible depth of talent among women, you know, sort of in their later 30s and up, and that you can go to those women and sometimes they'll even produce a film. You know, they'll be interested in playing a fiscal role and a talent role if they see it as a strong vehicle for themselves. That wasn't exactly the strategy here, but I just thought, you know, that's what I've just heard, is that, you know, there's
interesting,
just everybody's writing films for people who are very young, and there are incredible people who are not very young.
Well, the leads in my movies are like, or my movie that I'm trying to make are mid-30s or older. Could be like mid-30s to late, they're early 40s. Yeah. So you know, hey, maybe.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, so the guy that we actually talked to was Eric Avellino, and he did American Gun, and that was his film. And he, again, was talking about just that. Again, strategic. I don't think it's just women of a certain age that are interested in that. I think there are so many people and so many communities who are ready to see their own stories prioritized. And so I think you can reach out in ways that you might not expect. You know, it's just...
Right.
If you're telling a compelling story, people want to hear that and be part of it.
Yeah. I think reaching those people is the hardest part, because sometimes the agents and the managers can put up a pretty big wall to get through, you know? So having that personal connection helps.
Yes.
But I'm a big fan of, you can also manufacture the personal connection to a certain extent by really understanding not only the person that you're going after, but maybe even the agent or the manager, whoever's providing the wall, like really saying, doing a little bit of research and saying, you know, you, I noticed that your client, you know, X did this indie film and it was really successful. And I feel like this could be a similar vehicle for client Y, because I really targeted this, you know, role to, I've shaped this role for them or whatever. And I would love for them to have a chance to, I mean, I just, this is, this is really from the literary side of things that I've been learning this, but just, you can, you know, it's like, it's just the difference between like hitting on someone at a bar because they're the next person after the person you, who just rejected you and you're really drunk.
Right. Versus just like,
versus like, I know who you are and I want to work with you and your client for these specific reasons.
Right. Exactly. Like, it's crafting the introduction, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, but I feel like, you know, for anyone that, like any of the people that are on the top list of who I want to be in my movie, there's all like, really amazing. They're all really amazing people that I would have a really good, you know, explanation of why I want them, you know? And it isn't, for me, it isn't just anybody. It isn't just like whatever actor I can get, I want. It's like, no, I'm truly going after certain specific people for certain specific reasons, whether it's like I have a connection to them through some work that they've done that I feel really, really strongly about, or because I've seen them in other things that I feel like they're underutilized, like, you know, whatever. There's like lots of different reasons, you know.
And that might be one of those places where being a not just someone who's submitted to a film festival, but someone who is a participant, who participates in a film festival community, you can actually get closer to people because you're the person who's there helping the film festival get that person's work out, or working with people who work with that person.
Right.
You know, it's tough.
And also, who is it out there? Like, just thinking from their side, like, what do you have to offer them? You know, and I love what you're saying, Ulrich. And I think that's exactly it. Like, that you're specifically looking after them, and like, what's the win-win, and just, you know, and just not being afraid to say it.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. So we have about 5 minutes left. I'm just really curious. So you've got this movie, it's done, you're almost done, you're submitting it to film festivals. What are your plans next? Are you just going to stick with this in the festival stage and trying to get it released? And you talked about self-distribution. Is that sort of what you're looking at for this film?
Yeah. So my hope is to really, you know, there's a lot of ways right now where you can pay someone to put your movie somewhere. What I want to do is connect with people through a film festival run, and I think that's possible, and develop audience of film lovers, and then move into a place of distribution from that process. I don't think I'm going to get picked up by some big company, but you know, someone... Right. Well, you know, someone local, a friend of ours, the aunt of one of our kids' friends.
That is totally
did
how it's done.
Lane 19. Right. But she had a film in South by Southwest called Lane 1973 and was also shot up here in Sonoma County. Not a comedy. And, you know, she got picked up by The Orchard. And I think there are companies that are interested in looking at films that are doing well and building audience and helping it get to where it needs to go on a platform and be featured. But I think if it doesn't end up being that route, it's important that, you know, we have a plan B. So the plan B then would be, how do we get it onto a platform like iTunes in such a way that it has a chance of being seen in a bigger way? So it's not just like, oh, it's up on iTunes, here's the, you know, 400 character link, but how do we figure out to get it even for a day as a featured film on the iTunes front page?
Real quick. If you really wanted to have it distributed by some not major, but, you know, quasi-major distribution company. Where do you think Lost in the Middle fit in the grant? And we're going to have to cut this out. But when... Ah, oh, just lost my train of thought.
You're done.
Yeah, I'm done. No. I was like, oh, no. As far as like, if you had a distributor, who would you want it to be? Where does Lost in the Middle fit for which company that you think?
Well, you know, there's always fantasies like Focus Features. I think they do a lot of interesting things.
I was going to say something like A24.
Yeah,
you know?
I was totally thinking that.
Yes, A24 is another great, yes.
We all want to be A24 movies, right?
Well, right?
Yeah.
Those are the only ones worth, no. But I think, yeah, that would be awesome. I think, and here's one of the other things, like production value is probably going to hamper this film as well. Like, I think it looks great. I think it's enjoyable. I intentionally shot it that particular way, but it doesn't have the gloss that another film will have.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short. I mean, there's Tangerine, Unsane, both of those films are shot on iPhones.
I feel like to me, what I like in a movie is like raw, like, power, you know, whatever mm-hmm. that means to you, but like it could be in performance, it could be in visuals, it could be in just the way that you focus your lens, you know. And so, but I don't think that feeling that I'm describing or trying to describe has anything to do with production value, you know. I think it just has to do with the way that you look at the world and the way that you capture it as a filmmaker, you know. And and I respond really well to a movie that has that kind of energy, you know. And I mean, like, this isn't a great example because Get Out also had a great budget, but that's an example of a movie that I feel like just had this raw energy to it, you know. Mm-hmm. But there's other movies that are older or maybe even had lower budgets, like, you know, that also have that raw power to them too, you know. If only I can name some right now. but I mean, I think we all know what that feels like when you see a movie that has that kind of like richness, or just, it just draws you in, you know?
Yeah. And I think I was very, very lucky with the cast, with the crew. We had amazing people step forward. Our cinematographer and our second cam did a lot of work. I mean, you know, if you don't know how much work a cinematographer does, you don't really sort of understand film.
Right.
They were so skilled, and I just felt very lucky to be working with them on the project. And they worked well with our sound crew, and you know, having a crew that gets along is so important. And we had literally, we had a couple of days where we shot 20 pages. And the entire film was 12 days.
Man.
And so it's definitely, you know, of the things, like between a fancy camera and fancy this is and that, like, spend some time maybe on team building.
And how big was your team altogether when you on any given shooting day?
Oh, gosh.
Well, just from the craft services angle, I will say that we were sort of like a big day was maybe feeding 20 to 22 people, including cast and a crew. And that, and there were like eight lead characters. So it was a pretty tight crew.
Nice. Wow. But 20, that's still pretty freaking, you know, substantial, especially on that kind of budget. I mean, my goodness, that's pretty amazing.
But that's like, I guess so.
I was expecting like 5 or 10 or something.
Right? And that's the thing. That, again, we were so blessed with people taking time to participate and be, you know, and I said it at the cast and crew screening, but for me, there probably are very few screenings besides that one that will be more stressful, because this is the work they did. And it was my responsibility to do something with the work that they did and to make their time worthwhile. So having that group of people see it and like it felt probably more important than almost anything else except for getting it out into the world.
Wow. Nice. Well, I know awesome. We have to wrap it up. So last question for you, where can we find your work? Do you have a website? Is there a place that we can see your previous movies, trailers, anything like that?
So AngiePowers.com. I have my stuff up there, and it should have links to different smaller projects that I've done. Although I'll be honest, I need to update it.
Also check out our podcast, Storymaker Show, which is on iTunes and Stitcher and all that.
Oh yeah.
And then we have Lost in the Middle on Facebook. So if you look it up, Lost in the Middle movie on Facebook, you'll see 4 photos there.
Awesome. So.
Sweet. And there's more to come. I mean, we're kind of just
I'm kidding, turning public.
Sort of now, right? So we'll do yes. it. So you'll hear more.
Well, right now it's probably late January, maybe early February is when people are going to be hearing this roughly.
It's going to be so amazing by then.
Everyone will have already love these heard sites. Of it.
Oh, great. Perfect. Right. They'll have seen the trailer before they listen to this podcast. Yeah. You know,
they'd have seen the movie, hopefully.
It's in their local theater. Exactly. Totally.
Well, definitely wish you guys the best of luck. I thoroughly enjoyed being a part of the production. I thoroughly enjoyed meeting the two of you, and it's just been a blast.
Well,
oh, it has. Thank you so much, Jeff.
And you are so talented, Jeffrey. It was an honor to have you be the heart of the film.
Stop it. Stop it. Keep going.
He is very talented. We all know that.
Yes.
And then one little, really quickly. So Angie and I actually worked on a movie together, like what, 2 years ago, Angie, roughly? Maybe more?
I think it's three years ago at this point.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to you at the time, then you were saying, oh, I'm going to go out and make my first feature, hopefully soon or whatever. And it's amazing that 3 years later, it's done. That's awesome. So
in the blink of an eye,
it's pretty amazing. I mean, well, hey, I've been working on the same movie since then and I'm still fundraising. So,
hey, let me know if I can volunteer on either of your guys' projects or anything that I could do to help.
That's mostly how we're paying back our cast and crew. So in kind labor.
Sweet.
Yeah. If you want to, work on in the camera department on my movie, I'm sure we'd love to have you.
All right.
The pay will be very low. But it'll be fun.
I understand.
The great thing
that,
about film people is that you guys just can't get enough of it, right? I mean, that was the amazing thing. Everyone just wanted to be there for 12 hours a day. It's
we just can't stop.
One for punishment.
Okay, well, we'll have links to all the things that you guys just talked about on the website. We'll find your old movies, trailers, whatever. All that stuff will be there. If you want to check out our website, you can go to makingmoviesishard.com where you can find links to things we talked about on this episode. If you want to get in contact with us, you can send an email to podcast@makingmoviesishard.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at MMIH Podcast. And please, if you like the show, please tell a friend, spread the word. You could also leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. And Jeff, we'll have to put your contact information on there because you don't have access to the podcast email, but we'll make sure that your email's on there too so people can see you and reach out to you. Jeff, thank you for a great episode. And Elizabeth and Angie, you guys are amazing. Thank you so much.
It's really fun.
Thank you,
Ulrich. Super inspiring. And I'm basically going to just take that energy and go make my movie next year. Woo-hoo! No matter what.
Yay!
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah. All right, guys. Have a great week.
Bye.
Okay, Ulrich, if Angie and Elizabeth were on the show today, what is the one question you'd ask them?
Well, I just checked their IMDbs to see what they were up to, and it looks like they haven't really made anything since, Lost in the Middle. So I would be like, yo, are you guys going to make another movie? What's going on here? What's happening? I know they have children, so that could also be a reason why they haven't made another film. But yeah, I probably just want to hear what they've been up to, how Lost in the Middle is doing, because I think by now it's got distribution and everything. At the time, it was still in festivals. So yeah, I probably just want to get an update on the movie and then what they're doing as artists. I think that would be the main questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny. I didn't listen to the conversation you had with the Alicia, so I don't really know how good of a match this is. I just felt two women that were, made a movie together. I felt like that was a close enough. connection. I know Angie and Elizabeth are a couple too, so that's a little bit different, but I figured that looking over the vast episode count. Like, this was the best match I thought that we had. So I hope you all enjoy.
Also, I like that you're pulling things from deep in the vault, right? So this has been like 4 years ago. Maybe people haven't heard it recently. So it makes sense just to kind of bring it back out into a new audience. But Auric, we have a "You're the Expert" for you and me, both of us, for the week.
Yes.
Okay. What is "You're the Expert"? "You're the Expert" is our producer, Eric Toms, has decided that we're experts. Who knows why? I guess we've proven it to him somehow. And he likes to dole out a question to us that reflects our expert opinion on something that a lot of indie filmmakers want to know about. So this week's question is, when making a low/no budget short or feature, what are some good ways to save money? Can you recommend good cost-cutting measures? Auric, take it away.
So I have a really good one. This is also very open-ended. I probably could talk about this for hours, but like the one that I came top to mind is one that I actually suggested to mutual friend Clara because it might work for her. And she actually had done it before. So I was like, oh, okay. So this isn't that like much of a hot topic or a hot tip, I guess. Basically what you should do, don't buy insurance because it's too expensive. You should find somebody that you know who will underwrite you or basically become a co-producer of the movie and then let you jump onto their insurance. I did that for multiple shorts. I actually had my own insurance policy for a really long time. So I just used my own production insurance, but which you're not supposed to do, but you can do and it's fine. And then I also did it for my feature where one of my old partners, or I guess we're not really partners anymore because I haven't worked with him for 2 years, but he's still a friend. He did the same thing for the alternate where he let us use his insurance. He had like the best, fanciest insurance policy in the world. So like we use that to make that movie and it works really great. And I mean, it basically saves you like on a short, probably like a good $12,000 to $2,000, and then on a feature, a good $8,000 to $10,000. So yeah, definitely do that. Liz, what do you got?
I made a list and they're all things that we talked about before, but I will just say them again.
Of course you made a list. I made a list.
Pages cost money. So you want to save money, cut pages in your script. Cast costs money. You want to save money, cut characters. You know, there's something in indie film called Schedule F, and it means essentially paying an actor a bonus outside of their day rate. I think of it as a bribe, but whatever. But it is just like a little added benefit to actors. If you eradicate the policy of Schedule F payment for talent, well, then you save money. If you pay all cast and crew MFN or Most Favored Nations, if they all get the same rate across the board, then you eliminate negotiations. Then you also eliminate like awkward politics and you save money. Usually cut animals, cut stunts, cut specialty locations, work with people you have access to, shoot where you have access to, and don't do genre unless you are a special effects artist yourself or in some way, shape, or form, or have good friends who do those things. So there are lots of ways to save money. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to have two people in a room with white walls talking for 2 hours. It just means, you know, think about what resources you are connected to and utilize those instead of writing, you know, like a scene with a dog singing on the moon or whatever.
I'm going to add to that, write in locations you have access to. Did you already say this?
Or
shoot outside. Because the more outside shooting you do, the better it's going to look because Mother Nature is the best gaffer in the world. And, you know, you can get so much production value by just being, you know, having a movie that takes place outside predominantly.
Yes, 100% agree.
But yeah, I think everything Liz said I've done before. So it's a very good list. I would definitely double down on all those things.
Cut some pages, people. Cut your pages. Yeah.
I mean, because it saves you money, and the reason why it saves you money is because it saves you time. And that's like the most valuable thing when you're making a movie is time. And the more time you can give yourself to do a shoot a scene, the better the scene's going to be and the happier you are going to be as an artist. So if you like are trying to cram 12 scenes into one day, cut 6 of them or as many as you possibly can, because the more you cut, the better your day is going to go. You know, I think that's sufficient, right? It's good.
Yeah, we did it.
Yay. You can always send us a question, comment, or suggestion to podcast@makingmoviesishard.com. If you have a "You're the Expert" that you want to ask us, include those. That would be great. We haven't had anyone ask a You're the Expert yet. I think it would be fun to have someone do that. You could also leave us a review on iTunes, which would be most appreciated. That's like a way that the show naturally grows, is by iTunes reviews. So we have gotten quite a few this year, which is really great, but it'd be great to get some more. So that would be wonderful. Also, you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at MMIH Podcast, YouTube at Making Movies is Hard Podcast. And we got to give a big thanks to our bonus editor and regular editor, Jeff Reimuth, for doing the editing. Thanks to our producer, Eric Toms, for being simply the awesomest person out there. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to y'all next week.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.